Hello and welcome to Parkinson's Pathway Pals, Tuesdays with Teresa. I'm Teresa Jackson, your podcast host. Today, my guest is Dr. Michael Ocon. Dr. Michael Ocon obtained his MD with honors from the University of Florida, as well as his residency in neurology, and was the chief resident at the University of Florida. He received his fellowship training at Emory University in Atlanta, Georgia, before moving to found the Movement Disorders Program at the University of Florida. He is currently chief in neurology, professor and executive director of the Norman Fixel Institute for Neurological Diseases at the University of Florida Health College of Medicine. He has an active research career, has published more than 406 peer review articles, 80 review articles, and 10 books. He was recognized in a 2015 White House ceremony by the Obama administration as champion for change for Parkinson's disease, and he is well known as a Parkinson's leader throughout his community. Welcome, Dr. Ocon.
Oh, it's my pleasure to be here.
Dr. Ocon, today the purpose of our podcast is really to talk about non-motor symptoms. Just in the essence of time, we'll go ahead and skip over the four cardinal symptoms of Parkinson's disease. And there are so many non-movement symptoms that people have that it would probably take a long time to list them all. What I'd like to talk about today really is general, what I think probably falls under general health. And those areas are when people are having breathing and respiratory issues, fatigue, pain, sleep, and swallowing. We may not, in fact, get through all of those today, but let's see what we can address. I think, you know, I have a lot of people reach out to me and ask for me to do shows on our podcast on fatigue and sleep. So perhaps we should start there. Can you tell me, How should someone present this to their physician? Because it may or may not be related to your Parkinson's. And how do you partner with your physician in order to, to work through these?
Sure. So, first of all, it's great to be with you, Teresa, and thank you for all you're doing to bring education, out for the Parkinson community. I think it's really important, and it's something that I think we just can't do enough of, and especially with the numbers increasing as they are, and we just need to get as much information out to as many people as we can. Having said that, I think you bring up a couple of interesting, points and things that maybe we can, create some thoughts, for folks when they go to their doctors or healthcare providers or advanced practice providers. And I think that that one thought is being prepared when you go in, to talk about these things. Another thought is don't dismiss some of these symptoms as not being related to the Parkinson. And so when we think about fatigue and depression and demoralization and sleeping problems, guess what, Teresa? All those can be related to the Parkinson. And in fact, a lot of the biology of Parkinson, the changes that happen within the brain, would predict that we would see these things. And so a lot of our folks will come in and they'll think, gosh, I don't want to talk about something like fatigue. Let's take, for example, because fatigue is, everybody's fatigued, right? I'm tired, I didn't sleep well last night. However, if you feel fatigued all the time, that's not good. I mean, it's not a great way to live your life. And so how do you approach your healthcare provider for a discussion about fatigue or depression or maybe mild depression symptoms without them being dismissive of you? And so here's a few tips that I would give people to be thinking about. One is, when you go into your doctor, have some things written down, on a piece of paper and say, I'm feeling, fatigued. And I know there's a whole bunch of different reasons why I can be fatigued, research in Parkinson has shown that sometimes it's medications, sometimes it's super high dosages of dopamine can cause fatigue, for example. So sometimes, without meaning to, your doctor may have put you on too high of a dose, and maybe that's causing some fatigue, or it could be a formulation that you're on. could be the dopamine agonist making you tired or sleepy. And we would have people having soporific attacks and falling asleep at the wheel, on their dopamine agonist. So it could be what we call iatrogenic. And what does iatrogenic mean? That means it's caused by us. It could be that the fatigue is caused by us. And so let's consider that as a possibility. And it happens a fair number of times. And sometimes inadvertently, where you change one thing to, it's like whack-a-mole. You change one thing for somebody and then it causes another thing. And so asking your healthcare provider, whoever that is, hey, I'm fatigued. Could it be my medicines? Could it be my higher dose of dopamine? Could it be a dopamine agonist? Could it be another medicine? Could it be that I'm taking my sleeping pill and it's too much and I need to take it earlier in the night, so that it's worn off by the next day? Could it be that my sleep is off? Okay, so it could be medications and could it be sleep? So could it be a sleep issue? I mean, it is so common, Teresa, that it's a sleeping problem. And I know people don't want to have sleep studies, but why they say sleep doctors are so popular? It's because when you go to a sleep doctor and you're feeling like garbage, and then they do a sleep study on you, and then they can tell, oh, you have apnea, you have this and that, and you fix it. It's like, you have just created your best friend for life, because if you sleep well at night, you're going to have a great next day. So, there's a what I call it a magic sleep number. Everybody has one, like a magic sleep number for a lot of people is 8 hours, but making sure you have 8 hours of restful sleep. But sometimes you're not getting restful sleep, another component,
I didn't mean to interrupt you. I'm sorry. Sometimes
No,
there's a
no, go ahead.
lag when we do these virtuals, and
Yeah.
I hope I did not cut you off. I think it is. I hear a lot of people say how complicated it is. I heard you use the word dismissive, and I've heard other patients share that they feel like they've been dismissed when they're talking about fatigue. It's so vague and so complicated that it can be, pretty challenging, I think, probably for providers and patients to be able to resolve it. But it is an area that impacts your life almost more than anything else, including nutrition and exercise, all the things we need to be doing well at. But lack of sleep and fatigue can impact the quality of life greatly. In your clinic, when I talk to people and when people write in to tell me what they want to hear and learn more about, I hear people say over and over that this fatigue is different than any other fatigue. It's relenting. I mean, it's non-relenting, and you can sleep and wake up and still feel this like bone-crushing fatigue. Do you hear those type of things in your clinic?
Well, I think you hear one story and it's very unique to the individual. So sure, I've heard that before, and then and people who are crushed, and I like your term bone crush. I don't ever want to be bone crushed. So I mean, anybody feels like that, like boy, like just we should do something to try to help them out. It can be. It can be really, tiring, fatiguing, and just hard to do your life. And so, you can hear all of those types of descriptions. And then also, I'll just mention, Terry, that we also, at least in my clinic, we talk about sleep, we talk about medications, but we also talk about eating well. Sometimes it's not eating enough, and sometimes having lots of small meals is important. You're not getting enough calories throughout the day and you're losing weight slowly with your Parkinson. Staying hydrated can be really important. Exercising on both sides. So not over-exercising. Over-exercising can cause fatigue. And some people go nuts with the exercise and they're trying to win the Olympics, right? We talked about sleeping and but also staying socially connected, looking for other things to do, taking short breaks. And then, you know who the person you talk to the most is, Teresa?
Who's that?
Yourself. And
Oh,
so a
yes.
lot of people are very hard on themselves, when they can't, do as many things and they can't multitask and they can't do as many things with their Parkinson. And that can be fatiguing, and mental fatigue can lead to physical fatigue. So I also, I know it's not in any research articles, but I also make sure that people are are treating themselves well, because a lot of times we're very hard on ourselves and that can cause mental fatigue as well.
Yeah, I think that's really important because I'm not sure how well recognized the mental fatigue part is. Maybe it is well recognized, but I read that fatigue is sometimes, as we said before, dismissed, and it's under-recognized and undertreated. So I know it's frustrating for all of us that have PD to have Parkinson's. If someone is just continuing in this loop of I am fatigued, and they're not and they are being dismissed by their movement disorder specialist or their neurologist or whoever they're seeing that's managing this, what are some good next steps for them?
Yeah, so next steps, are, well, one, it's not always a neurologist that has to solve the problem. You need a captain of your ship, and you've got to have somebody that's going to work with you. So it could be a good general practitioner, could be an advanced practice provider, could be also a licensed clinical social worker that helps to guide your ship through and keep talking, talking it through to see what can be done to help you. And so I think having a plan and having a check-in, somebody you can check in regularly with is important.
So I think that too can because there's so many different symptoms, sometimes those can be brought to the neurologist because the patient's unsure. Like, is this related to PD? Is this caused by PD or the meds? Or is this something that's separate that my primary care should be managing? And I think that can get confusing and difficult sometimes for patients. Do you have a best practice when someone's trying to decide, do I make an appointment with my general that, if they have a good one,
I think I would have said in the old days, oh yeah, because I was, maybe not as humble as I am now, and every day I practice medicine, I know a little less. And so, I actually have come around to believing that the best healthcare providers are the ones that are willing to take the time with you and work it through with you, and that sometimes relying just on the neurologist or the psychiatrist, they might not be the right person, to just keep working the problem through together. So a good general doctor, a good family practice doctor, a good advanced practice provider that stays on it and is looking at the entire holistic picture, everything from, like, are you on any pain meds that might be causing sedation, to could there be a disease in the background? Could you have lupus or something that you didn't know, or a low level, connective tissue disease that's causing fatigue, and not just, blaming it and walking away before trying to work with folks.
Yeah, I wonder, sometimes when you hear the words bone crushing fatigue that people describe, my thoughts sometimes go to, is this a heart issue? Like, I'm not, my heart's not being, pumping effectively or whatever. There's so many different areas, I suppose, that it could be. I'd like to kind of shift gears just a little bit and talk just a little bit about mental health. I read in one of your books a quote by Elizabeth Gilbert, and I think it is so accurate. And the quote is, "When you're lost in those woods, it sometimes takes you a while to realize that you're lost. For the longest time, you can convince yourself that you've just wandered off the path and that you'll find your way back to the trailhead at any moment. Then night falls again and again, and you still have no idea where you are, and it's time to admit that you're bewildered." So, for anyone that may be having what I would describe as a mental health issue, like depression, you mentioned depression earlier, and anxiety, because I think anxiety is also something that's very common in Parkinson's. Sometimes I think people just don't even, they've denied it for so long because there's a shame and a stigma and an embarrassment about it. They don't even know where to start once they realize maybe, maybe there is a component of this. What do I do now?
Yeah, I think that it's really important to consider, what happens to a person with any chronic disease and how they can get lost. And so, I chose that quote as, a favorite dark quote of mine. Not all quotes are always, going to be the positive quotes, but I think it really encapsulates how, you can get into darkness and you can try to find your way out and you can't find your way out. And that's, sometimes worse than the opposite, easily getting out, and the panic and the anxiety and the things that that adds, make it very, very, challenging for folks. And we often say there's a very dangerous profession in the state of Florida here that happens just down the street from here at the University of Florida, and that's cave diving. And if you're cave diving, into a cave, and you it's dark and it's cramped, but when they find cave divers who die, it's a very high mortality hobby. It's very dangerous. You got to know what you're doing. But if you panic, when they go to retrieve your body, they find out that you had plenty of oxygen on your body, but something happened, maybe you got turned around and you panic, and it's the panic that actually, is the most, bewildering. And in that quote, about being lost in the woods, it's about bewilderment, right? And so we have to recognize not only the bewilderment of the person, but also the bewilderment of the caregiver. We should be spending as much time with the care partner or the caregiver as we do with the person. And we should recognize that when people are at at that level of just being overwhelmed. And because it doesn't have to be like that. These are very treatable things. And that often leads to demoralization too, which is the other kind of new kid on the block. It's not new. I mean, we all know it, but now, there are studies that show 1 in 6, 1 in 5 people get demoralized. You don't have to be depressed. You can just become demoralized over what's going on. It doesn't have to be that way. And so our recognition of these things, will help us to catalyze, dealing with them in a more reasonable way.
Yeah, I hope that people, anyone that's listening to this podcast really hears that if you're not being heard, you either need to speak up louder, speak to someone else, whatever it is, but don't just let something go on and on just because you're labeled as a PD person or you're someone living with Parkinson's. So it's just part of the journey. For Parkinson's, because I think there are so many things that aren't treated that could be treated that really impact the quality of someone's life.
I 100% agree with that. And I just think, we need to be kinder to ourselves, and we need to be kinder to others, and realize that people do get into these states of bewilderment. And we, in the amount of time that we have in the healthcare system to spend with folks, and some people don't have resources for teams and social workers and counseling, it's hard. It's not an easy journey. It's a hard journey, but we can help people through it. We do need to recognize these things. And just like you say, oh, make the diagnosis of Parkinson's disease, and everybody fights about all that, and there are all these tests and everything. Well, how about this? How about that's not the biggest challenge? How about the biggest challenge is recognizing when somebody is bewildered, somebody's lost, helping them along, because we know it's a very livable disease if we can lead them out of the forest.
I think that is really so profound. I hope that on all of my podcasts that not only is when people come and listen, they're not only gaining information, but they're also gaining hope. I think hope really creates the difference in our lives. It creates purpose and quality of life. So, I guess just trying to get as many in as we can today. I kind of wanted to talk a little bit about breathing and respiratory. I hear people contact me about, just they can't get that cleansing breath. So is that anxiety or is something else going on, or is that part of the disease itself? So when you have someone that comes in that's complaining of dyspnea, just can't breathe or can't get that, that cleansing breath, where do you start with that?
Yeah, so well, a couple of things first. First and probably most important, can you have shortness of breath with Parkinson? You bet you can. Okay, so there's the first thing. Can it seem like the world is, just gonna slip away from you because you're short of breath? Absolutely. And can it lead to people going to the emergency room a lot and repeat hospitalizations and everything? Yes. Okay. So like, oh, yes to all the questions. Okay. Now, there's a few things that I've learned just in general, and that is, there are folks who think they're short of breath but are not. And so if you're worried, that you have something medical going on where you're not oxygenating, you're not getting oxygen, and you're not, you can use your Apple Watch, So if you're getting shortness of breath and have Parkinson's disease, having a device like either a wrist device or a ring, like one of these Oura rings, or something that you can set, on there. And you can reassure yourself, you can look at your heart rate. Sometimes it seems like your heart rate is racing, but it's not. And sometimes it seems like you're not oxygenating. And so you can get what's called a pulse ox. And those can now easily be done at home in real time. And so for people who have a lot of shortness of breath, I think it's quite reassuring, to know where you are with some of your vital signs. And one of those that we were not until recently able to do routinely at home with folks, like a temperature or like a blood pressure cuff, was this. And you could just wear a ring or a watch, right? And so I think it's reassuring for people, to not have to go to the emergency room thinking that they're having something bigger than what they're having. And so if you're having repeated episodes of this, I find it really nice, a nice starting point to say, okay, look, you went to the emergency room, they say you're oxygenating, okay, but you might have been able to figure that out at home. So maybe this is the Parkinson. Okay, so then it opens the door. And then it also opens your mind to think, gosh, it seems like I'm short of breath, but maybe I'm anxious. Maybe this is a non-motor effect from wearing off of my medications. One of the most common things, Teresa, is wearing off, and in between dosages causing the shortness of breath. And some people with shortness of breath have to move those dosages as close to every 3 or 2 hours, and sometimes even need a therapy called GPI, deep brain stimulation, and a target called the GPI has been used. STN is another target. Those have been used as well. But some folks will need that. And some people actually have a dyskinesia, where they've got an extra movement of their diaphragm or something like that. So there can be complicated things going on with Parkinson. The most common is wearing off. It's not a diaphragm, dyskinetic, like a dancing diaphragm. That's not the most common. Most common is wearing off, and moving dosages and changing the cocktail usually works, quite well for most folks. And then for people that are like type A, like me, maybe you, Teresa, I don't want to label you, but people that are type A, a bit OCD, most neurologists are, they, and if you get a disease like Parkinson and you're already type A, it makes you even more like anxious and more OCD, and works you up. That actually contributes to this problem with shortness of breath. And a lot of times we need to pay attention to that and actually talk to people. What were you like before the Parkinson? Is it just when it's wearing off or the other things? And sometimes we need to manage anxiety with mindfulness, with cannabinoids, with serotonin drugs, and just think through like what fits for this individual person. So that's kind of how I think through it. And the answer is, you bet. Shortness of breath and Parkinson, you bet. It definitely can occur.
Well, I want to thank you for today. I know that we are coming toward the end of our time here, and I'd love to have you back, or maybe in the next 30 seconds, you could even tell us. I know you went to the World Congress, World Parkinson's Congress, late just recently in July in Spain, and I think people would like to learn or hear about what are some of the new things coming down the pike.
Yeah, so there's a whole bunch of new stuff that's out there. And just so your listenership knows that they can go on to clinicaltrials.gov and type in Parkinson, and then they can even do advanced searches. If you're really good at computers, you can do an advanced search and you can say how old you are and how long you've had Parkinson, and they can tell you all the things that you can qualify for. There were updates on things like immunotherapy, so things that are working with the immune system, vaccine types of therapies, several updates on diet and microbiome, a whole bunch of things on biomarkers. And, we wrote about that. I have a blog called ParkinsonSecrets.com, a free blog every month, as we wrote about that. So certain things that you can do symptomatically every day. And then in terms of some of these new, mind-blowing things that some of the younger kids, I say, are trying, everything from nanoparticles to magneto and thermal energy and applying ultrasound plus other things. And so it's very exciting, right now. It's an exciting time.
I just seeing all the pictures and videos and talking to friends that attended, it sounded very exciting. Well, the last thing I'll just ask you is if someone wants to see you, whether that's virtually or come into the Norman Fixel Clinic, what is the best way to get in touch with you?
So we have so our group has a whole bunch of neurologists. So like I'm cloned, and there's a whole bunch, there's 12 or 13 of us to do what I do. So one, don't just wait for me or wait for one person. If you need care, you need care, right? And so and you oftentimes outnumber us. But if you need care from the Norman Fixell Clinic, we do complete multidisciplinary care. We all practice with the same philosophy. And you can call our number, which is area code 352 in the United States, 1-352-294-5400, 294-5400. And then the other thing is that, I help with this Parkinson Foundation helpline. I'm their medical advisor. It's free. It's 1-800, the number 4-PD-INFO. Many people don't know, the younger people don't know, that your numbers on your dialing telephone actually have letters associated with them, but it's true. 1-800-4-PD-INFO. We have, 12 or 13 people there that are of various specialties that can answer your questions. And when they can't answer your questions, they actually ask me, and we go over them every month, anything that they can't answer, and by email. So, there are lots of places you can get help. We have free books for folks, the Rainbow Series at Parkinson Foundation. There's lots of resources, lots of blogs and things. And so get out there, get involved, and if we can help to answer questions, if you need help connecting, or if you want to call the 1-800 helpline, they can also tell you where the Parkinson Foundation Centers of Excellence might be close to you, or they may know of some experts closer to your home.
All
So you
right.
should always reach out and never be afraid to ask questions and to seek more knowledge.
Well, I just want to thank you so very much. Your time is important, and I know our listeners will benefit from today's podcast. So thank you for sharing your expertise and your experience, your knowledge. And to my listeners, thank you for listening today, and don't forget to subscribe. I'll see you Tuesday.